Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
And that's it, actually. But here's the record, Undertones and Teenage Kicks. What a treat.
Hey there, everybody. Patrick here. Hoping everybody is enjoying a good Friday out there in the world. My co-host Jim is doing some dad business, as we used to say today. So I'm taking over the airways, and we're going to take a real short trip together into the book nook. Welcome to the Book Nook. Look, we have books. And over there, another book. And right over there, it's a Kindle? Thanks to the lovely and talented Mike Wagner there for that theme music, little collaboration we did. And it's been too long since we heard it. But today, folks, I want to talk to you about a book that I had read some years back and recently got back out and read again and thoroughly enjoyed it. And I thought it made a lot of sense to talk about this book in light of the fact that Rockin' the Suburbs has recently launched a radio station under the stewardship of the amazingly talented Keith Jacobson. And you can find that station at suburbsradio.com. And you can find us on Twitter at Suburbs Radio, Facebook, Suburbs Radio. Just search all those outlets. And you can also go to suburbspod.com and learn a little bit more about the radio station there. But the book in question today is one called Good Night and Good Riddance: How 35 Years of John Peel Helped Shape Modern Life. And it was written by an author named David Kavanaugh, who sadly is no longer with us. So rest in power, David. It was published first in 2015, and I came across it a few years back and just found it immensely, immensely fascinating. And essentially what it does is examines 256 of the many thousands and thousands of radio programs that John Peel broadcast in an attempt to not only look at the music he played and how modern music was shaped in Britain and, around the world, but also it ties in political events, happenings in sport and culture, and just sort of shows that when John Peel would come on the radio in the evenings, as he did for the majority of his show, at many times it was a tumultuous day that was coming to an end, and he was there to guide people and to express thoughts and feelings through the records he played, which were in many, many instances groundbreaking and essential to furthering and establishing the careers of many artists. I outlined a couple of reviews that actually were on the Goodreads site. If you guys are big bookworms, Goodreads is a great place to get recommendations and reviews. Someone with the name Jonathan Walker wrote in a review of this book, a series of short essays, each covering one of several hundred selected Peel shows arranged in chronological order from 1967 to his death. The essays are not mere catalogs of running orders or pedantic lists of trivia. They move outwards and try to suggest where a Peel show fitted into the wider musical and media culture, which he also helped to shape. Really well said. And that makes the book fascinating, not only to see some of the songs he played during certain sets, but how he reacted to them, which artists he stuck with. And, you know, at some points it got really weird. some of the things he was mixing together. I mean, he remained very loyal to a lot of mainstream artists throughout his career and, of course, remained loyal to punk rock as well. Just a quick history of John Peel here for you folks. He was born John Robert Parker Ravenscroft. A lot of people don't know that. And in the early 1960s, he had the opportunity to travel to the United States, to Dallas, Texas specifically, and was originally, I think, going to work in insurance or something like that, but had always, since his childhood, been an avid record collector and fanatical music listener. In 1964, he got a job on the Dallas station KLIF as their chief Beatles correspondent. So being a someone from Britain, he obviously had an inside track there. He also worked in Oklahoma City and San Bernardino, California, over the next 3 years. In February 1967, he traveled back to the United Kingdom, and that's where he got a job, was almost immediately hired by Radio London, the largest of the pirate radio stations that were anchored offshore and formed an alternative to the BBC's domination of radio. Of course, it wasn't too much longer before the British government stepped in and passed a law outlawing the broadcasting of the pirate radio stations. And in 1967, John Peel was one of 28 or 30 DJs hired by the BBC to continue their pop music programming. And against all odds, I'm quoting from David Cavanaugh's book now, against all odds, Peel was to stay at Radio 1 until his death in 2004, surviving every one of its periodic rebranding and purges. His final years on Britain's foremost youth radio station may have been an implausible concept on paper, a man in his 60s playing cutting-edge music to an audience young enough to be his grandchildren. So his influence not only sustained itself, but it grew over the years. He had a variety of different radio shows. He started out on Radio London doing a show called The Perfumed Garden, which was very much at odds with the Top 40 format of Radio London. It was hippie-ish, and he played a lot of very psychedelic music and talked about being kind to plants and animals at all times, and had a very mystical kind of hippie mindset to it. And also notable at this time at Radio London was where they thought that the name John Ravenscroft was just a little bit too unwieldy and hard to remember. And a secretary apparently at Radio London suggested the name John Peel, because it was shorter, it was one syllable, easy to remember. And from that day on, he was John Peel. John Robert Parker Ravenscroft essentially folded into John Peel for the rest of his life. After that, he had a show called Top Gear. He had another one called Night Ride. He had one called Friday Night is Boogie Night, if you believe it. Sounds of the 70s. And then finally settling into the John Peel show, where, among other things, he famously fell in love with Teenage Kicks, a song by The Undertones, and broke all, I think, radio and British conventions by playing it twice in a row.
I find myself very much sought after these days, not in the way that you're thinking, unhappily, but by sort of radio and television media people generally, who want to do little pieces about the man who made The Undertones. And of course, this doesn't help the band much and makes me look a bit like a prat, because obviously the people who made The Undertones were The Undertones, and the media people really don't seem to understand this at all. They feel that if they tell me how wonderful I am often enough, my principles will just melt away, and I shall say, yeah, okay, it was me who made The Undertones, nothing to do with them at all. I say all of this because this will probably be the last time we play the single, because other people are playing it now, happily, and it's it's not exactly whizzing up the BBC charts. I had hoped that it would whiz a bit higher, but it's whizzed to something like 31. I actually consult the piece of paper, seeing as it's here for once, and old aunt consults piece of paper rather noisily and finds that indeed the record is at number 31. Here it is. She looks so good.
couple of things that are fascinating about this book. All the things that he had influence on, I think most notably, he was noted for really embracing punk music. And there wasn't one thing this book is very instructive about is there wasn't one moment. John Peel has a very famous show called The Punk Special, and you can go and find that show online. And there's an amazing site called John Peel Wiki where there's all kinds of episodes that have been uploaded and videos. And of course, they go into the long history of the Peel sessions. So live sessions that he hosted at the BBC studios and gave opportunities to all kinds of groups. It's really a staggering, staggering list when you look at all of them. And on the John Peel Wiki, there's a list of the top 125 that have sort of been picked out. And many of them are available for download. And there are samples of those songs there. I will note that John's favorite band of all time was The Fall, and they recorded 24 different Peel sessions over the years. So he remained loyal to them as long as he was with us on the planet. But, you know, there was the Punk Special show that played a lot of punk music, not exclusively, of course, but there wasn't really one night or one day specifically where he said, that's it. You know, I'm trashing all the old Steve Millers and King Crimsons and Brand X's of the world, and I'm flipping the switch to punk music now and forever. David Cavanaugh does point out in the book about the BBC and Peel's relationship was prickly at times. And I'm quoting here, the BBC had been extra conscious of its family of listeners, gathering them to its bosom with anniversaries and lookbacks and lists. But Peel is the one DJ at the station who doesn't mind seeing his listeners heading in the other direction. Even if their individual departures were to become a mass exodus, he's prepared to write it off as collateral damage. If John Peel ever told his audience to get on the bus or go to hell, he did it on the night of 29 August 1977. So that's a show you may be able to go out there and find, folks, if you're a fan of Peel, as I am. And it's interesting, too, from my perspective, an American's perspective, you know, we never really had the chance to listen to John Peel on a regular basis when he was in the prime of his career, or even later on his career in the 90s and early 2000s when I was aware of him. There wasn't really a way for us to do that on the internet or over terrestrial radio at that time. And you can go back and find, you know, the lists, the set lists, the, you know, a lot of the quotes, and in many cases, people who recorded those shows on their own have uploaded files, MP3 files of many of these shows. And it's a wonderful history lesson in modern music and punk music as well. And at this time, I want to go back to the Goodreads reviews of this book and read one here from someone who calling themselves Martin Wagemakers. I don't know if those are real names up there, but his comments, I think, are very insightful and mirror kind of how I feel about the book. I quote, "This is a very strange one to put your finger on. It's not exactly a biography of John Peel, yet at the same time it is. It is a retelling of more of Peel's on-air adventures rather than the all-encompassing life story that it could have been. David Cavanaugh basically just picks a few of Peel's radio broadcasts from each year, framing them in the zeitgeist of contemporary news, and describes what he hears. Strangely enough, it works. It grounds Peel's story in his on-air opinions. Cavanaugh's not afraid to deal with contradictions in Peel's stubborn patterns either. Remarkable tidbits, bands that debuted on radio months, years, sometimes even decades, like in the case of Pulp before their big breakthrough, while dealing with his off-air life in a breezy style that never gets too sentimental. A strange yet compelling read." Wilton's Jukebox.
Dancing for Mr. Nelson.
that is The Fall from their very first Peel session doing Rebellious Jukebox. Believe it was from June of 1978. And the complete John Peel sessions by The Fall are available, folks, in one ginormous box set totaling 214 tracks. So look out for that. And if you have a long drive coming up, strap that baby into the CD player and go. Going back to the Peel sessions, I mean, I think that's where a lot of American listeners or record buyers of our vintage, my vintage, who came up in the 80s, you know the Peel sessions from. You would get those gray and black covers with, you know, the name of the artist, and you weren't sure if it was a live concert or what exactly it was. And then it had the list of every single artist that had been on the thing, and it was just staggering to sit there while you're listening to the music and look at all the artists that had done these strange Peel sessions. And you know, occasionally there would be a mention in you know, you might pick up a New Musical Express or a Sounds newspaper at the import record shop or something, and occasionally read through that. You know, every new band that would come out with a 7-inch single and they press it themselves would send it to John Peel and hope against hope that he would play it. And in many, many, many cases documented in this book, bands from Billy Bragg and the cases even made to David Bowie to little punk bands, especially some of the Scottish punk bands, you know, that were starting out in Edinburgh and Glasgow, received support from John Peel and were able to sign record contracts just because of, you know, his exposure on BBC. And, you know, there are a lot of cases pointed out in this book where people are on the other side of the fence. You know, they sent him their tape or their record and it didn't make it on the air. And I don't think necessarily it was because John Peel didn't listen to it. I think he listened to pretty much everything he could. There's a quote in the somewhere here. Oh, right here, folks, from Steve Albini. He says, this was at a Melbourne music conference in 2014. Steve Albini says he listened religiously to every single record he received in the mail, devoting hours every day to the task. I sent him a copy of the first album I ever made, and not only did he play the record on air, he sent me back a postcard with a personal remembrance of Chicago, of visiting a matron aunt as a child in Evanston, the suburb where my post office box was kept. I treasured that note as the first indication that John Peel was a great man. So he did those kind of things and worked so hard. And because he was on the air for such a long, long time, and because he touched so many different people, reading this book taught me or showed me that people outside of London were greatly affected by John Peel, because in many cases, wherever they were in the country, in Ireland or in Wales or in Scotland and all over Britain, you know, they didn't have access to all these record stores that were in London or Manchester or Liverpool. And they were in the, you know, so-called suburbs or sticks in many cases, yet they could listen late at night to John Peel. And there are many stories of people being upset that they missed even the first 5 minutes of his show and they would rearrange things. And again, because that cultural influence was so wide and so pervasive, it's difficult to understand it, but I think that this book, David Kavanaugh's fabulous book, really comes pretty close to showing you just how important, how influential, and how deep John Peel's impact was on modern music, yes, but also modern life, too, the way he altered it just by playing records and listening very closely and playing what he liked and sticking with what he liked. And his you know, incredible contribution to reggae is just one subtext of what he did. There's a line somewhere in the book, you know, that paraphrases something that says, unless you're specifically being told that he's not, John Peel is probably playing a reggae record right now. An amazing book and well worth reading, especially if you're into this whole radio thing that we've been doing on Silver Pod. So can't recommend it highly enough. 5 stars from the Book Nook, folks. Good Night and Good Riddance, How 35 Years of John Peel Helped Shape Modern Life by David Kavanaugh. You can pick it up used. I believe there's a paperback. You can get it on the Kindle like I did. It's affordable. So I would highly, highly recommend reading it if you're interested in modern music development, if you're interested in radio, or just John Peel or just British music, you know, or any kind of post-punk and punk music. I think, you'll really find it to be pretty fascinating, and many moving anecdotes in there. Well, thanks for listening, folks. I'm going to take you out of here now, and we're back next week. Speaking of radio, it's a good segue. We're going to have a week of shows with Keith Jacobson, general manager of Suburbs Pod Radio. Suburbs Radio is going to be there with me and Jim. We had a lot of fun recording those and messages from many of the DJs on the station, so you'll get a good deep dive and primer into the station itself. I am Patrick Foster, and this podcast is called Rockin' the Suburbs. Again, my co-host Jim is out today on some dad business. He'll be back, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Big boy, know what you say, good. Big boy, watch I man good. I'm like a cutting razor, don't you check my size, I'm dangerous. I'm like a cutting razor, don't you check my size, I'm dangerous. If you are chucky, a chucky, a chucky, check I man good. If you are bully, a bully, a bully, know what is I good. I'm a cutting razor, don't you watch my size, I'm dangerous. I'm a cutting razor, don't you watch my size, I'm dangerous. Range fierce, notice I could. Range fierce, watch I man could. I'm a cutting razor, don't you watch my size, I'm dangerous.
And this next is from Wingtip Sloat, from a 7-inch EP, an import from America that came to me from Ajax Records in Chicago, actually, and hand-painted sleeve, one of those, limited edition, I don't doubt. But what is a sloat, if anything?